Wednesday, November 30th, 2022. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope your week is going well. I hope you, your family, your friends, you're all staying strong. You're all staying healthy right now. Hey, today is the final day of November. We are on to December tomorrow. I hope you are bracing up. You are getting ready for the holiday season that is coming. And, you know, I hope that your Thanksgiving holiday was amazing. Hope you were able to spend some time with family or friends, hopefully breaking bread, being grateful for all that you have. And I hope you were able to kind of sidestep those dreadful cranberries. Maybe you got to avoid the Detroit Lions doing what they do every Thanksgiving, which is finding a way to lose. And of course, the big news today and this week is that the United States men's national soccer team advanced to the knockout stage of the 2022 World Cup in Qatar by beating Iran 1-0 on Tuesday to finish second in Group B. And that books them a last 16 matchup. They will be playing the Netherlands on Saturday. And all of us that don't really care that much about soccer can pretend that we care a little more on Saturday. Hey, Team USA scored the lone goal of yesterday's game in the 38th minute to get that crucial win. And the U.S. will now be looking to advance to the quarterfinals for the first time since back in 2002. But, you know, this game actually had some feelings involved on both sides. We had some controversy. Not sure if you saw this, but it seems that over the weekend, the U.S. Soccer Federation Twitter account posted and then later deleted an image of the Iranian flag. However, in the picture that they posted, the flag was missing the emblem of the Islamic Republic. Now, they said this was done to show support for the women in Iran fighting for their basic human rights. I didn't even know that sports teams here in America would ever say anything about another country's rights, but who knew? Well, apparently, when they did that, it didn't sit well with Iran. They filed a complaint for offending their dignity, they said, with FIFA's ethics committee. Now, here's a question I have for you today, Daily Dose listener. Which is more surprising? That Iran claimed their dignity was offended, or that FIFA has an ethics committee? Who knew that? I had no idea. FIFA having an ethics committee? I mean, honestly, that was shocking to me. I literally had no idea. They're the filthiest entity out there. They have an ethics committee. That is great. Iran apparently asked the U.S. to be suspended for 10 games for offending their dignity. That didn't happen. And then yesterday, the U.S. sends them home. And honestly, it sounds like sends them home to a pretty scary situation for the players and their families. Because there is literally talk there could be arrests and worse for losing a game. Yeah, that's not horrifying at all. Hey, Iran, never mind all the stuff we were saying about how you're infringing on basic human rights. The fact that you might be taking your players to task for losing a game, no, your dignity is fully intact. It sounds like you've got your priorities exactly right. Speaking of that World Cup, it's been almost a week since Saudi Arabia shocked the entire world. The Persian Gulf nation shocked everyone when they somehow beat Argentina 2-1 in the World Cup last Tuesday. Do you realize Saudi Arabia was a 20-1 underdog, but they got two quick goals and that gave them the victory over the heavily favored Argentina squad. Naturally, when they got the win, Saudi Arabian fans, like, they went wild. Celebrations were incredible. People, they say, were ripping the doors off their houses. So it's not that surprising that the rich oil barons in Saudi Arabia actually said they would be rewarding the team for the biggest win in their nation's history. Saudi Arabia's World Cup heroes each will be given a Rolls Royce by the country's royal family. According to reports, they say when Saudi Arabia beat Lionel Messi and Argentina, that Prince Mohammed bin Salman Al Saud will present each of the players with an RMX Million Rolls-Royce Phantom when they get back from the tournament in Qatar. That is what they say each player's reward will be for actually pulling off that upset. Here's the kind of weird thing to me. They go out and they get the win against Argentina on Tuesday. Cool. But then we saw on Saturday, they played Poland. And they were beaten 2-0. So, are they going to have to give those Rolls Phantoms back? Because I know you got the upset. Everybody was all excited. Everyone got all emotional. But then you went out and you got trounced. So, how does that all work? Are they happy to still... Well, here's your car. I know you ended up sucking, but hey, you did get that one win, so here's the car still. That's a lot of money. I realize those guys have money to burn, but man, they're literally burning it on that. When you lose to Poland in the very next game, it kind of seems like they might have to walk that back. You know what? We're going to bring that back. We're actually just going to give you, I don't know, like a Nissan Sentra. I think that's a little more sensible when you lose to Poland. You don't get the great car after that. Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you, make sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com. where we have new articles going up every week. I released an article just yesterday talking about the Denver Broncos and all of their problems. And Young Jimmy will release an article on Thursdays. You never know which direction they might go, but it's good stuff. I would encourage you to head over there. But we also have links to the podcast. We have links to the video. And yes, we have links to the Daily Dose gear. Hey, like I said, the holidays are coming quickly. Maybe you have someone on your list and you're not sure what to get them. Well, we've got a number of designs for you. Over at DailyDoseSports.com, maybe you need a t-shirt, a sweatshirt, a hoodie. Maybe you need a coffee mug. Whatever you might need for that special person on your list, be sure you stop by DailyDoseSports.com every week. Kind of check in with what's going on over there. There will always be something new up there for you to check out. Hey, today on the show, you know, it's been a little while since we just talked about current events in the world of sports. We had Thanksgiving. We had a lot of things going. So we're actually going to take a look at that college football playoff outlook. What's going to be happening there? And we might be taking a look at a couple other sports leagues and asking the question, what if the season ended today? Some interesting things to think about there. Plus, we will have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you today. And I'm going to warn you ahead of time, might be a little bit painful for me personally. But first, let's jump into some sports news. And of course, the bigger stories coming out this week is that crazy carousel of coaches going on in college football. Every year, we always kind of want to see who is going to end up getting a new ride, getting a new seat on that carousel, and who is going to get dumped off and not have a seat to sit down on when the music stops playing. Well, let's take a look at some of the bigger ones that have come out this week. Because the Nebraska Cornhuskers were talking about all the top candidates that they were going to get after they fired Scott Frost earlier this season. They talked about Urban Meyer. I think they talked about Bear Bryant, Nick Saban, Joe Paterno, and then they set out and they signed Matt Rhule over the weekend. Not quite an Urban Meyer or a Nick Saban or a Joe Pa, but they got Matt Rhule. Here's what's crazy, though. They are going to pay Matt Rhule like he is Urban or Nick Saban or Bear Bryant. The former Carolina Panthers and Baylor head coach will earn $72 million over the next 8 years. If you don't like to do math, that breaks down to an average of about $9 million annually. Hey, that's just a shade behind guys like Dabo Swinney and Kirby Smart. And yes, Nick Saban. Hey, Matt Rhule has proven he can coach at the collegiate level. I don't question that. He rebuilt both Temple and Baylor in a short amount of time. But I do still wonder how that spread offense is going to fit in those Nebraska winters and how that spread offense is going to hold up with his home state offensive linemen who aren't exactly the most athletic guys, but are more, you know, pushers forward. I would think he'd go out and get that wishbone guy, but that's me. That's just me. I'm sure Matt Rhule is going to prove me wrong. You know, just like Scott Frost did, Mike Riley did, Bo Pelini did, Bill Callahan did. And, you know, maybe the biggest difference between what Matt Rhule did at Baylor and Temple in comparison to Nebraska, keep this in mind, there were zero expectations at either of those places when he took over. Meanwhile, at Nebraska, like, Nebraska really believes they're going to be in the college football playoff every year. Expectations can really, really change perception and really, really change a feeling around a program. You know, we talked a little bit last week about the rumors that Lane Kiffin would be leaving Ole Miss for Auburn, but Kiffin was quick to shoot those rumors down. Instead, Kiffin will return as Ole Miss football coach next season, and he is signing a contract extension with the Rebels. Sources say Kiffin's new deal will take his average salary into that $9 million range. He made just $7.25 this year. You know, in 3 years at Ole Miss, Kiffin is now 23-12. Solid. Good. Not great. A year ago, Kiffin led Ole Miss to its first 10-win season in school history. But, you know, sometimes we wonder who starts these rumors, because there was a real strong rumor that Kiffin was going to Auburn. So who started that? Well, this one makes me think it was Kiffin himself. Because think about this. He did nothing. He's lost his last few games, and he's still got a raise. Yeah, I'm wondering if he started the rumor. On the other end of the spectrum, we have Stanford head coach David Shaw, who has resigned after 12 seasons at his alma mater. Shaw announced his decision to step down effective immediately after Saturday night's 36-25 loss to BYU. And here's what Shaw had to say. He said, I prayed about it. I thought about it. And with every hour, it seemed it was more cemented in my head. The phrase that kept coming to me is, it's time. Shaw's now 50. He said he hadn't considered resigning until earlier this past week, but he said he has no desire to coach another team at this point. Shaw steps down as the winningest head coach in Stanford history. He has a 96-54 record. But his resignation comes after back-to-back 3-9 seasons and a 4-28 stretch since the start of 2019. But you know, during his first four seasons, David Shaw led Stanford to 3 Rose Bowls, including 2 wins, as well as 3 Pac-12 titles. And he picked up 4 Pac-12 Coach of the Year awards during that span. But like I said, it's been rough lately. And I think the lesson here is that no matter how we spin it, and no matter how much you can change things temporarily over the long haul, nerds can't play football. It looks like Hugh Freeze has agreed to a deal to become Auburn's next head football coach. The school announced that on Monday. Auburn administrators, including athletic director John Cohen, met with football staff members earlier on Monday to tell them about Freeze's hiring. Here's what they had to say. After a thoughtful, thorough, and well-vetted search, we ended where we started, with Hugh Freeze. That is what Cohen said in a news release. Of all the candidates we considered, he was the best fit. Fit has several meanings, but the most important factors were student-athlete development, football strategy, recruiting, and some SEC experience. Now, Freeze's contract with Auburn will be 6 years at an average of $6.5 million annually. Remember, Freeze has spent the last 4 years at Liberty, where he took the Flames to some pretty impressive heights. He's widely regarded as one of the top offensive minds in the game. Sure, while at Liberty, he recently just lost 3 games in a row to UConn, Virginia Tech, and New Mexico State. But don't worry about that. That's another story. This will be Freeze's second head coaching stint in the SEC. You might have forgot that, but he led Ole Miss's program from 2012 to 2016. And during that time, Hugh Freeze beat Alabama and Nick Saban in back-to-back seasons in 2014 and 2015. He actually capped the 2015 season with the Rebels' first Sugar Bowl victory since the 70s. However, in January of 2016, the NCAA charged Ole Miss with numerous recruiting violations under Hugh Freeze. An investigation turned up evidence that Ole Miss employees and boosters arranged numerous impermissible benefits for players, like car loans and just blatant cash. At least one recruit was suspected of getting help on his college entrance exam. In July of 2017, the coach before Freeze, Houston Nutt, sued Ole Miss for defamation, contending that Freeze and school officials falsely blamed him for those violations. He says they actually took place under Freeze. As part of discovery of that lawsuit, Nutt's attorneys filed a Freedom of Information request for calls that Hugh Freeze made on his university-issued cell phone in January of 2016. And while reviewing those records, Nutt's attorney discovered that those calls were going to a number associated with a female escort service. They alerted Ole Miss officials about it. Freeze claims it was a misdialed number. He actually convinced the next place that he worked for, Liberty University, he actually convinced Jerry Falwell's university that, oh, you know what? That was my bad. I just misdialed that number. I was close. I was trying to hit a 4. I accidentally hit a 9 and then a 6 and then another 9. Man, ain't nobody believing that. You just happen to misdial that number every Saturday night? Come on, Hugh. Come on. Come up with a better lie than that. I don't care that you lie. I know they all lie. Come up with a better lie is all I'm asking. But I mean, honestly, when you look at Hugh Freeze, good offensive mind, he does win. And we know down there in the SEC, a lot of times that covers everything. They don't care about anything else. So this is a good fit for Auburn. War Eagle, baby. War Escort. Whatever. Finally, the Wisconsin Badgers have signed the next head coach of their program. Following a 6-6 season, after they fired Paul Christ, and then they raised Jim Leonard to the interim position, the Badgers and AD Chris McIntosh, they now say, have got Luke Fickle away from the Cincinnati Bearcats. Hey, this is quite a get for the Badgers. But I'm going to be honest. This isn't the home run that everyone thinks it is. I know everyone's just like, oh, they got Luke Fickle at Wisconsin. This guy knows how to put together a program. This guy knows what he's doing. He's a really, really good football coach. But I do have my concerns about the fit of this coach at Wisconsin as well. And my biggest concern is that Fickle doesn't really fit the mold at Wisconsin. In that he actually looks, well, fit. I mean, think about this. Wisconsin is the home of cheese. And I don't know how else to say this, but like heavier people. I mean, Barry Alvarez, Brett Bielema, Paul Christ. They're not exactly a model of fitness. Wisconsin, what are you doing going and getting Luke Fickle? This guy is in shape. But that's not who you are. You're Madison, Wisconsin. You're the home of cheese and butter. Fat guys are who you are. Above all else, Wisconsin, be true to thyself. And the hiring of Luke Fickle, I don't know. This doesn't feel like a Wisconsin thing. This feels more like what Wisconsin wishes it was. But we've seen the pictures. We know who you are, Wisconsin. You're the fat kid that wants cake, not the guy that's in shape like Fickle is. Okay, coming back. How is that college football playoff shaping up after what we had was a wild weekend? We're going to take a look at those conference championship games that are coming, and they could leave us with some chaos if things break right. Plus, we're also going to be looking at the NFL, too. How would things look if the season ended right now? Yeah, we've still got a lot to get to today on the Daily Dose. So I know we keep being told how if college football jumps to a 12-team format in their playoff, it's just going to be too many teams. It's just going to be too much. We don't need that many teams. We're going to see a lot of blowouts. We're going to see a lot of teams that don't belong there. Totally understand. Totally get it. And yet, how would things look right now if we had a 12-team playoff? Let's just say we didn't have the conference championships and they were just going to play it off from here. Well, this is how it would look. Number one, Georgia, would be facing number 12, Utah. That might be a decent game. We saw Utah go down to the swamp earlier this season, battled with Florida. We know Florida has some talent, not as good as Georgia, but that would be an interesting game. In the second game, number 2, Michigan, would be facing number 11, Clemson. That might be a little interesting. I don't think Clemson could hang with Michigan, but that might be interesting. Number 3, TCU, would be facing number 10, Kansas State, which is actually what we have coming up this weekend, so that would definitely be a good game. Number 4, USC, would be playing number 9, Washington. Yeah, I'd sign up for that right now. Number 5, Alabama, would be facing number 8, Tennessee. Really good game there. And number 6, Ohio State, would have a rematch with number 7, Penn State. Now, I realize that's just kind of how things fell this week in the polls and everything. But you're telling me every one of those games would just go chalk? I know we keep being told we don't need 12 teams. And that probably is true, honestly. But how much fun would this be? I'd love to see these games. And then after these games, you'd have the second round. And you'd have the third round before finally getting to those, you know, finals and everything. They need to hurry up and make this happen. It wouldn't be a little better than the current format. It would be so much better than the current format. I really want this 12-team playoff to get going. Got to get these idiots moving forward on this. There's too much money at stake, and it would be so much fun to watch that tournament. I know they tell us it would be terrible. Are you kidding me? That would be so, so entertaining. Okay, so now, after what was a wild weekend, with the number of surprises, we have the conference title game set in college football. And those conference title games, in some cases, they're basically going to be playoff games. Win your game, and some of these teams can advance to the college football playoff. Lose, and things will at least get interesting. Let's say that. Let's take a look at some of the big conference title games that we have coming this weekend. We start off in the ACC, where the number 11 Clemson Tigers will be facing the number 22 North Carolina Tar Heels. This game will be on Saturday night. Talk about a letdown game. Because Clemson still had some slim college football playoff hopes until this last week when they were upset by their arch rival, the South Carolina Gamecocks. But it's not just Clemson. Because North Carolina has now lost back-to-back games. They lost to Georgia Tech. That's a horrible loss. And then this last weekend, they lose to North Carolina State. So the ACC title game, honestly, it's a big who cares. We go next to the Big 12 Conference Championship game. It's going to be on Saturday morning. It will feature the number 10 Kansas State Wildcats versus the number 3 TCU Horned Frogs. And this game actually has big college football playoff implications. Because if the Horned Frogs, who have had a few scary games this year, were to slip up, have they done enough to still make the playoff? If they were to get beat on Saturday by K-State, do they get in? I feel like that's real dicey. TCU does have a very solid strength of schedule with 6 ranked teams on that schedule total. But most of those ranked teams have turned out to be kind of fake. So I believe TCU needs to avoid a slip-up. They need to win this game, or they could be playing with fire. And you know, that Kansas State squad, they are just goofy enough to be a problem. I think TCU could be in for a dogfight here. I think they'll come out on top, but I think this might be tougher than it looks. We reach the Big Ten Championship, which will be played on Saturday night between number 2 Michigan, who is coming off of that monster beatdown of Ohio State in Columbus on Saturday, versus unranked Purdue. Hey, if you're wondering why these conferences are getting away from these goofy divisions, here's Exhibit A. Because if Purdue somehow upset Michigan, then things again get dicey. Having said that, Michigan is going to beat the dog out of Purdue. Purdue has no business whatsoever being in any kind of game with the word championship in the title. But here they are. Back to Michigan, briefly. What Jim Harbaugh accomplished this last Saturday in whooping Ohio State and ending their season and ending the Heisman run for quarterback C.J. Stroud, hey, that's impressive stuff. Once again, Michigan pushed the Buckeyes around up front, and they came up with big plays over and over again. But remember this, Michigan fans were ready to fire Harbaugh during that COVID year. Now they're singing his praises. Things changed quickly. Michigan will be strolling to the college football playoff after this game. Next up, because they have a high school mentality, the Pac-12 will play their title game this Friday night. But it does have some serious future implications because the number 4 USC Trojans will be facing the only team on their schedule that has actually beaten them this year. Because the number 12 Utah Utes, they beat USC back in October by a wild score of 43-42 in a very entertaining game. Not only are the Trojans' college football playoff aspirations on the line, But I really believe quarterback Caleb Williams, he's now the front runner for that Heisman Award after the night he had this last Saturday against Notre Dame, where he accounted for 4 touchdowns in that big win. I really believe now it is Caleb Williams' award to lose. But you just know Utah would love to cause him to lose it. And they would love to take the Trojans out in the process. Hey, I rarely say this about the Pac-12, but this game, Friday night, is absolute must-see TV. I think the early season loss actually helps USC here. I believe the Trojans will avenge their only loss of the year. They will get the win, and they will be headed to the college football playoff. Finally, we reach the mighty SEC, which is also in letdown mode, because the LSU Tigers were red hot. Brian Kelly had them rolling. They had climbed all the way up to number 5 in the national rankings, and then on Saturday, they pooped their pants against the dreadful Texas A&M Aggies, and now this title game becomes dangerous only for Georgia, because LSU has no prayer for the playoff. Having said that, doesn't it seem like anytime the Georgia Bulldogs truly face a real, actual test, they come up with their best performance of the year? We weren't sure what to expect out of Georgia at the beginning of the year. They come out and they pound Oregon, blow Oregon out. Then we kind of see them get through some games, kind of ugly. They find ways to win, but it's not that pretty. And hey, now they're going to play Tennessee. Tennessee looks like the big dog. They're the hottest team going. And they blast Tennessee. Every time we think, well, maybe this is the week Georgia slips up, they come out and they completely dominate. I think this is a very dangerous game for Georgia. I actually think they could still lose a close game and get in, but do you really want to take that chance? I would not. So where will the chips land? If all the favorites hold up, then what we would most likely have is number 1 Georgia versus number 4 USC in the college football playoff, and then we would see number 2 Michigan versus number 3 TCU in that other college football playoff game. However, it seems like every time we think we have this college football playoff thing figured out, someone throws a wrench into the works. We could easily see that happen again this weekend. Some very, very fun football coming this weekend. Not quite a playoff, but it's getting close because some of these games basically have playoff implications involved. Okay, let's move briefly over to the NFL and let's take a look at what things might look like if the playoffs begin today. Even though we just completed week 12, but if the season were to end today, what would the postseason actually look like? Starting off in the AFC, the Kansas City Chiefs would currently have the bye week as the top seed. They have that 9-2 record. You know, the Chiefs offense this year, it has been more diverse without Tyreek Hill. And the defense has been okay. But you know, bizarrely, it has been the special teams that haven't been that great this year. But hey, as long as the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes, they are going to be a big dog. And they are definitely the big dog this year. They are the 1 seed. They would get a first round bye. Right now, the number 2 seed would be the Miami Dolphins, who would be facing their division rival in the wildcard game, the number 7 seed, New York Jets. Now, the Dolphins have that explosive offense. They have Tyreek Hill. We will see if their defense can improve. And the Jets may have found their quarterback in Mike White, who played so well again this past Sunday. But here's something crazy to think about. If we had Miami versus the Jets in the wildcard round, these two teams did already meet in week 5. And the Jets won 40-17. Now, game 2 between these two will be the season finale. That may be a very, very interesting game. At the number 3 seed in the AFC, we have the Tennessee Titans, who are doing what they do lately pretty much every year. They run the football, and they play defense, because they have no quarterback. Ryan Tannehill is making Titans fans wish they had Ryan Fitzpatrick. He has been awful. The Titans right now would face the number 6 Cincinnati Bengals, who actually just won this exact matchup on Sunday. Quarterback Joe Burrow, he's getting a little more protection lately, and the Bengals seem to be improving. Now, on Sunday, this is a very tight game. This would be a great playoff game. At the number 4 seed, we have the Baltimore Ravens, where quarterback Lamar Jackson is carrying that team because they have a number of injuries, and he just doesn't have that much help around him anyways. The Ravens have now lost four games in which they led by at least 9 points in the second quarter or later. That might not bode well if they were to face who they would face right now. That is currently the number 5 Buffalo Bills. And we know the Bills are more than capable of making late game comebacks with quarterback Josh Allen. Sure, his career will probably be cut short by injury eventually, but Allen and the Bills would be very dangerous in this spot. And even though I don't particularly like the way the Bills are looking recently, I'm not sure if the elbow is bothering Josh Allen or what's going on. They haven't looked sharp lately. Still, Bills versus Baltimore, yeah, that would be a very, very fun wild card round game. So with this current format, we would then have the winner of Baltimore and Buffalo going to Kansas City and the winner of the Dolphins and the Jets playing the winner of the Titans and the Bengals. Now, honestly, we're going to have a lot of things move around, but I don't know if this is going to be that far off from what we end up with. Other teams that are out there that are pushing for a playoff spot in the AFC would be the New England Patriots and the Los Angeles Chargers. But right now, those two teams would be out. This is what we would have in the AFC. We move over to the NFC, where the Philadelphia Eagles are the number one seed with that 10-1 record. And hey, this team is very balanced. They win the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. And quarterback Jalen Hurts, he's got to be in the MVP conversation. The Eagles would have the bye week in the NFC right now. The Minnesota Vikings would currently be the number 2 seed right now, which is crazy to think about because they have an overall point differential on the season of just +5 this year. But they do have that 9-2 record. The Vikings would be facing the number 7 seed, the Washington Commanders. It's a playoff starter right now. Hey, the Commanders have really flourished. Once quarterback Carson Wentz went away, they've really taken off. Now, are the Commanders great? No. But are they dangerous? Yeah, they are. And would they be extremely dangerous if they played the Minnesota Vikings and Kirk Cousins in primetime? Oh, yeah, they would. Look out. That would not be a great matchup for Minnesota. The San Francisco 49ers are currently the number 3 seed, but doesn't it kind of feel like we're really waiting for them to take off? They have a ton of pieces, but they're not flowing just yet. Maybe that's just because Jimmy Garoppolo is just that kind of quarterback. I don't know. That defense is pretty stout, though. And if the offense does get on track, hey, San Francisco is going to be a load. The Niners right now at the 3 seed would be facing the New York Giants, who are currently the number 6 seed in the NFC. The problem for the Giants is that defense is not very good. So the Giants actually have to outscore people with Daniel Jones at quarterback. Now, he's been much better this year. But stop and think about that for a minute. The Giants have to outscore people with Daniel Jones. Yeah, the Giants might be in some trouble there. The reeling Tampa Bay Buccaneers are currently the number 4 seed because they would be a division winner. And now, with the loss of all-pro offensive tackle Tristan Wirfs, Tom Brady is even more vulnerable. And that's saying something because he already was. Like, he's under duress every play. The Tampa offense is terrible, and that defense gives up way too many big plays. The Buccaneers would right now be facing the number 5 seed Dallas Cowboys, who are putting up 34 points per game since Dak Prescott returned. I'm calling it right now. This matchup would be horrible for Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. So then this would mean the Cowboys would probably advance and would be facing the top-seeded Eagles in the divisional round. And the winner of the Minnesota-Washington game would be playing, well, the winner of San Francisco and the Giants, but most likely San Francisco. Hey, just looking, even right now, we are going to have some great NFL playoff matchups coming this year. Now, right now, the Seattle Seahawks and the Atlanta Falcons are the first teams out of the NFC playoff picture. They are still hoping to slide their way in. From the best teams in the NFL, let's slide down to the worst teams in the NFL. If the season were to end right now, here's how the NFL draft order would look. The Carolina Panthers would currently have the number 5 pick in the NFL draft. The Panthers are now 4-8, and they would most likely probably on the hunt for the next college quarterback that they could find and ruin. My guess would be Ohio State's C.J. Stroud. That feels like that would be a good fit for them, to take him in, break him down, ruin his career, and then, you know, spit him out the bottom of the NFL. Sorry about it, CJ, but that seems like that might be a pretty good fit where you might end up. The Panthers would be at number 5. My Denver Broncos would have the number 4 pick based on their atrocious record, but remember, the Broncos traded that pick to the Seattle Seahawks in the Russell Wilson deal. So right now, the Seattle Seahawks would get the number 4 pick. Now, I would think they might try beefing up that defensive line a little bit. There are a number of players out there, can think of a couple off that Georgia defense especially, that might be a good fit for Seattle. The Los Angeles Rams would be getting the number 3 pick, but they traded it to Detroit to get quarterback Matt Stafford. So Detroit would have this pick. Now, the difference between the Rams trading their pick away and my Broncos trading their pick away is that at least the Rams, you know, won something first. But the Lions really need some defense. They just can't stop anyone. I could easily see the Lions taking a defensive player to beef up that defense a little bit with the number 3 pick. The Chicago Bears currently would be getting the number 2 pick in the 2023 NFL draft. And you'd have to think that either they would grab a crazy generational kind of talent like Alabama linebacker Will Anderson, or maybe they go offense and they actually try to pick someone to help quarterback Justin Fields, because he literally has to run for his life on every single play. So maybe you go get him a wide receiver. Maybe you get him some offensive line help. You would think you might want to get him, you know, a little help. He's back there by himself. But it would be tough to pass up Will Anderson. That guy is just so talented. And then the number 1 pick of the 2023 NFL draft right now would be going to the lowly Houston Texans. And they need it. They have a 1-9-1 record. And I mean, honestly, Houston can just close their eyes, throw a dart at a board, and they're going to need whatever they hit. You would think they may try to go quarterback. Maybe they go Kentucky's Will Levis. Maybe they go Alabama's Bryce Young. But I'll just say this. Whoever gets taken by Houston here, no, you're going to be in for some rough days. At least for a while, until they get some help around you. You're going to be in for some rough days because they just don't have anything else down there. Houston right now would be getting a number 1 pick, and they desperately, desperately need it. They just don't have enough talent. We will continue to keep an eye on this NFL playoff picture. Hey, we know it's going to change a little bit, but is it going to change that much? I think right now we are already starting to get a pretty good idea of how this is all going to shape up. Okay, coming back, we are going to take a quick look at what the NBA playoffs would look like if their season ended right now. And trust me, there would be a number of surprises right now. There are a few teams that have overachieved. We'll see if that can last. There are a few teams that you're going to be wondering, what in the world are they doing right now? But then we also need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. You know, my Denver Broncos made a big trade this past offseason. And right now it's not really going all that well. But here is my question that I have for you, Daily Dose listener. Could my Denver Broncos trade be one of the worst trades ever in NFL history? We're going to answer that when we get back. You know, the NBA season, it's so early. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because we have such a long way to go. But like we've kind of been talking about today, if the season were to end right now, what kind of things might we see in the National Basketball Association? I'm telling you right now, we would see a few surprises. Over in the Eastern Conference, we would see the Boston Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks as the top 2 seeds. Okay, no surprise there at all. We all expected that, right? However, who would have had the Cleveland Cavaliers at the number 3 seed? Probably not many of us. And who would have had the Indiana Pacers as the number 4 seed? Yeah, probably even less. I don't know how many of us were really expecting that much from the Pacers. But wait, who would have thought the Philadelphia 76ers would be clear down at the 6th seed? That's a little bit surprising, isn't it? I mean, we thought they'd be a little bit better. What about the Brooklyn Nets down at the 10 slot, having to play their way into the playoffs, basically? That's kind of embarrassing. For a team that does have a lot of talent, they just have a lot of head cases on that team as well. But wait, I'm going to give you one worse. Because do you realize right now, that the Miami Heat are currently in the number 11 spot and would miss the playoffs completely? That's surprising to me. I thought Miami might be a sneaky team to watch over there in the East. Right now, they would not even be playoff eligible. That's disappointing. And, you know, I didn't expect a ton from the Chicago Bulls, but they would be out right now, too. They would be down at the 12 seed. That surprises me. I didn't expect them to be like a top contender, but I thought they'd be at least in the hunt for a playoff spot. The Chicago Bulls have been disappointing so far. Okay, let's flip over to the Western side of things, where we also have a few surprises. First off, where are those defending champion Golden State Warriors? Well, right now, they would be clear down at the number 10 seed. We all saw that coming, right? The Warriors, they're eventually going to warm up, though, I would think, right? Surely, Draymond punching Poole in the face isn't going to completely crush their season, right? I don't think it is. I think they'll bounce back. The top two seeds in the West right now would actually be the Phoenix Suns and my hometown Denver Nuggets. Okay, that's not totally shocking. But who saw the New Orleans Pelicans jumping all the way up to the number 3 seed? I didn't. I thought they'd be a little bit better this year. They have some guys back. They're a little more healthy, but I didn't think they'd be clear up at the number 3. The Portland Trailblazers would currently be the number 5 seed. That's real surprising. I'll be honest, I didn't think Portland would even be a playoff team. And we'll see if they can be. Here's the biggest surprise, though. Right now, the Sacramento Kings would be the number 6 seed. Huh? What year is it? I thought Sacramento would be a little better, but they can't possibly be an actual playoff team, can they?
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me?
No way. We'll see. Meanwhile, the Los Angeles Clippers are the number 7 seed. That's really disappointing. Again, for a team that has a lot of talent. And the Dallas Mavericks would currently be out of the postseason at the number 11 seed. Who would have seen that prior to the season? A lot of people looking at Dallas saying, hey, maybe they're a contender. I didn't think they'd be a contender, but I thought they'd at least be a playoff team, right? Understand this. The NBA season, it's so long. There's no reason to panic quite yet, but you do want to see some improvement here in the next month as we head into the new year, or you're going to start to see some teams that are going to be in so much of a hole, it might end up being too deep to dig themselves out of. We will keep watching the NBA. We will see how some teams adjust. We will see how some teams get better, and we're also going to see some teams start to fall apart. It's easy to win in 15, 20-game segments. It's hard to do it over an 82-game season, and you just watch. We're going to see that in the NBA over the next month or two. We're going to start to see a lot of these things even out just a little bit. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, my Denver Broncos made a big trade this offseason. Desperately needing a franchise quarterback, the Denver Broncos sent quarterback Drew Lock, tight end Noah Fant, defensive lineman Shelby Harris, 2 first-round picks in 22 and 23, 2 second-round draft picks in 22 and 23, and a 2022 fifth-round pick to the Seattle Seahawks for quarterback Russell Wilson, and a 2022 fourth-round pick. Of course, we now know Russell Wilson has been terrible in Denver. The Broncos have been terrible. And the Seahawks, while I'm not quite sure how much to believe in them, they're at least in the hunt for a playoff spot. Of course, in this era of hot takes and this era of a lack of sports history, we have many people asking today the question, is the Russell Wilson trade the worst trade in the history of the NFL? Well, today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is going to count down the top 5 worst trades, and you go ahead and you can be the judge yourself. We start off at number 5. And we go back to the year 1999. Imagine this for a second. Imagine that you had what you believed was an absolute sure thing of a draft pick. It might be a generational type of talent. How much would you be willing to trade for that pick? Well, back in 1999, New Orleans Saints head coach Mike Ditka felt that he had exactly that. So he traded all six of the Saints picks in the 99 draft, as well as the first and third pick in 2000 for the rights to draft Texas Longhorns running back Ricky Williams at the number 5 overall pick. I mean, it wasn't that Williams was bad in the Bayou. He was pretty good. It's just that he didn't produce the way that Ditka and the Saints were hoping. He was good, just never great, and he never took him anywhere. He eventually would be traded to the Miami Dolphins for 4 draft picks, including 2 first rounders. The picks used to get Ricky mostly bounced around, but essentially the only pick worth noting was LeVar Arrington, the number 2 overall pick in 2000. None of the teams really made out that well in the Ricky Williams saga. Washington didn't. They got some picks, didn't do much with them. The Saints didn't. They got Ricky Williams, never did much with him. But for the Saints to put so much on the line just to get that one player and not have that player turn out the way they wanted, yeah, the Ricky Williams deal comes in today at number 5. We move on to number 4. And when you hear about the USFL making a comeback today, it all sounds kind of silly. But back in the 1980s, the USFL arrived on the scene and actually began getting big name players to come play there. Think about this. Reggie White, Jim Kelly, Gary Zimmerman, Anthony Carter, they all went to the USFL because of that money those owners were paying their players. Well, a quarterback out of BYU decided to do that too. He spent some time with the LA Express before being picked by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the 1985 supplemental draft. But he wasn't very good in Tampa. He went just 3-16 as a starter. It wasn't really his fault. He didn't have an offensive line. He didn't have any running backs. He didn't have any wide receivers. He didn't have a defense. No help whatsoever. So Tampa Bay decided to ship the former BYU Cougar to the San Francisco 49ers in 1987 for a 2nd and a 4th round pick. Go be a backup to Joe Montana. In return, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers drafted linebacker Winston Moss and wide receiver Bruce Hill. Meanwhile, the San Francisco 49ers got quarterback Steve Young. Now, Young had to wait his turn behind Montana, but then when he got his chance, 6 NFL passing titles, a Super Bowl Most Valuable Player award, oh, and a Hall of Fame induction. Steve Young is one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game. And the Buccaneers gave him away in a trade that comes in today at number 4. We arrive at number 3 and we go back to 1998, where the San Diego Chargers held the number 3 overall draft pick. The Indianapolis Colts had the number 1 pick. The Arizona Cardinals had the number 2 pick. But the Chargers were on the market for a quarterback. They were hoping they might find their franchise starter. Now, there were 2 prospects that year that were widely considered to be the best of the bunch. The Chargers would have been happy with either one of them. But they were worried that Arizona would deal their 2nd pick to another team and take that other quarterback. So the Chargers sent 2 first-round picks, a 2nd-round pick, Eric Metcalf, and Patrick Sapp to the Cardinals to move up exactly 1 spot. And then, when the Colts took Tennessee quarterback Peyton Manning at number 1, the Chargers took Washington State quarterback Ryan Leaf at number 2. Manning, of course, turned out to be one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. Leaf turned out to be one of the biggest busts in NFL history. But as painful as it is to have that bust, it isn't nearly as painful as trading a bunch of capital for that bust. We all remember Ryan Leaf being a massive disappointment. But we sometimes forget that the Chargers had to give up a ton to even get that pick. The Chargers and Ryan Leaf come in today at number 3. We land at our number 2 worst trade in NFL history. And to quote Good Will Hunting, we just have to say, it's not your fault.
It's not your fault. I know.
Because this trade was completely forced on the Baltimore Colts. John Elway was the number 1 overall pick out of Stanford. But he didn't like the head coach and the ownership in Baltimore. And the bad news for Baltimore was, unlike a lot of guys, Elway had options. Elway threatened to pursue a career in baseball if they didn't trade the pick. And it wasn't just posturing, because Elway was selected by the New York Yankees in the second round of the 81 Major League Baseball draft, side note, 6 spots ahead of future Hall of Famer Tony Gwynn. He actually got $150,000 for playing for the Yankees affiliate in the New York Penn League in the summer of 82. Many scouts saw Elway as a good baseball player, but he would probably be better in football. However, Yankee scout Gary Hughes believed that if Elway had concentrated on baseball, the sky would have been the limit. He would have been off the charts. Yankees owner George Steinbrenner aggressively tried to get Elway, and they say Steinbrenner planned to make him the Yankees' starting right fielder by 85.
That kid was a human dynamo.
Which Elway later described as a tremendous and exciting thought. He was like, hey, I could go play baseball. So the Colts drafted Elway anyway. But Elway refused to go to Baltimore even. About a week later, the Colts had little choice but to give up. So they traded Elway to Denver. And in return, the Broncos sent quarterback Mark Herman, the rights to offensive tackle Chris Hinton, a first-round pick in 1984, which would turn into offensive guard Ron Solt, to Baltimore in exchange for Elway. In Denver, Elway became a legend. He went to 5 Super Bowls. He won 2 of them. And he's one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game. Meanwhile, Herman was a journeyman quarterback. He only played 5 games for the Colts. Solt was mostly remembered for taking a ton of steroids. Hinton was actually a solid player. He went to the Pro Bowl 7 times, but still, he wasn't worthy of a Hall of Fame game-changing quarterback. The Colts just did not get what they deserved to get for a talent like John Elway. The trade was so lopsided. And that lands the Colts today at number 2. So we arrive at the number 1 most lopsided NFL trade of all time, and all the other trades mentioned on our list today were lopsided. But none of them came close to what happened on October 12th, 1989, the day that the Dallas Cowboys made a trade with the Minnesota Vikings for a price tag that has never been seen before or since. You have to think back of the culture of both of these teams at that time to really understand this one. Because the Vikings were good, but the thinking was, they were like a piece away from really being a dominant team. And they were thinking that piece was a really, really good running back. Well, the Dallas Cowboys had a running back by the name of Herschel Walker. He fit the bill. Now, ordinarily, most teams would never trade their star running back. That's all they had. Dallas didn't have much. But it was a really weird time in Dallas at that time. Jerry Jones had just bought the Cowboys. Jimmy Johnson was the head coach. The days of Tom Landry and all of that, those were over. That was long gone. Jones and Johnson actually kind of still liked each other still at this time. And they agreed they just needed a lot of players. And Walker was the only thing they really had. So they shopped him. And when the Vikings heard Walker was available, they came up with a deal that offered 3 draft picks and 5 players, with the possibility of some conditional draft picks tied to those players. Jones says, when the Vikings sent the fax over to him, he ran over to accept the deal before they had a chance to withdraw the offer. With that package that they got for Herschel Walker, the Cowboys went on to make some exceptional moves. They turned the Herschel Walker trade into 18 players, including guys like Emmitt Smith, Russell Maryland, Kevin Smith, Clayton Holmes, and Darren Woodson. They built the foundation of a team that won 3 Super Bowls in the 90s. Jimmy Johnson later described the deal as the Great Train Robbery. I guess they probably should have called it the Great Trade Robbery. Now, you will notice my Denver Broncos making that trade for Russell Wilson didn't make their way onto our list today. It's not by accident. As much as we want to proclaim this the worst trade in the history of the NFL, there's one key difference between that trade and some of the ones on our list today. You have to actually get something of significance with those draft picks. In the last few seasons, we have seen the Seattle Seahawks squander a number of picks, picking up guys that wash out, never produce. If this trade is eventually going to be one of the worst ever, then one, we really do need to see Russell Wilson kind of wash out here in Denver I'd like to see him surrounded with a little more help before we declare that. And two, we need to see Seattle actually get some value. Otherwise, we'll just say, well, the Seahawks got rid of a guy that was at the end of his career. But that kind of trade happens all the time. It doesn't make it one of the worst ever. Hey, next week on the Dose, we are going to know who is in that college football playoff, and we're going to have a lot to discuss there. Plus, the NFL is rolling. Things are changing all the time. And we have all the sports things going on right now, so we are going to have plenty to discuss here on the Daily Dose. So be sure you stop by. Be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But more than anything, thank you so much for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me?